There continues to be a lot to talk about regarding the world, both involving and not involving COVID-19. The situation in Hong Kong is still ongoing, and the situation is complicated in a lot of regards by COVID-19. And we talked about that situation in a previous show. The president and his beef with the World Health Organization, politicians that don't agree with him, state governors, and responsibility in general, would all make individual shows of their own. The narrative shifts about the source of COVID-19 and weaponized disinformation. The spread of COVID-19, currently sitting at 2.5 million plus worldwide and nearly 1 million in America and nearly 200,000 deaths worldwide and more than 50,000 in America as of the last time I checked. The nursing home issues and the effects on the Black community, all of these would also make interesting shows in their own right. We could talk about the situation brewing in the Middle East concerning the military strikes the U.S. initiated in March, or the fact that the stimulus set aside for small businesses have run out without reaching the most in need. The debate over antimalarials has also taken interesting turns, which new studies have come out showing that they more than double the chance of death instead of helping. Even with a second round of stimulus incoming, and the effects of this stimulus starting to be shown through botched payments and failed systems, we have to continue to digest the most significant piece of legislation to come into law in recent memory in terms of cost. And we could say one of the most significant ever, again, in terms of cost. I guess a little Trump speech is starting to rub off on everybody. So we're going to be finishing up the second title of H.R. 748, the CARES Act. Correction, we're not going to be finishing it, but we are going to be finishing Section 2. This is Lessons from the Screen. Welcome to Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any particular information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. And as always, you are welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a Black activist advocacy and think tank organization with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for Black people in America through education, culture shift, and economics. You can check them out, and you should check them out, at PAXINC.org. That's www.pactsinc.org. Take a survey, tell a friend, read a book, check out the Learning Center, get involved, volunteer, do what you can to help them because they are doing what they can to help you. And without further ado, let's go ahead and get into subtitle two of the CARES Act, because it's still $2 damn trillion. $2 damn trillion. Who doggy? What that do, Harpo? Wait, that ain't the voice you use for that. Anyways, here we are, starting subtitle B, which is labeled Rebates and Other Individual Provisions. It sounds very boring, but it is very not. It's probably the most exciting piece of legislation for the vast majority of people in America. This is the stimulus check section that a lot of people have already gotten and a lot more are expecting to get. The rollout for this particular piece has been pretty disjointed for many people, and we can talk about that because it's already happened. The IRS website to track refunds got off to a slow start, and once people got in, many saw that their money had been sent to the wrong bank account and had received amounts different from what they expected. And that was even interesting because this administration and the Republicans in general attacked the last administration for the rollout of the AC-80 Affordable Care Act. And they have been relentless in their attacking of it. And then to have this thing roll out as poorly as it did was interesting to see. Also interesting to see that nobody has still taken responsibility for the horrible rollout of this thing, but we know how people nowadays feel about responsibility. Anyways, let's get the juicy on this piece of fruity. So for eligible people, they will receive a credit against the 2020 taxes for the amount of $12,000, or I'm sorry, $1,200, $2,400 for joint filers, and $500 per qualified child. Now, the credit is refundable and treated as an allowable, basically meaning that it's a one-time payment that does not have to be paid back or reported on future taxes. The amount is also determined by the income of the filers with filing status. To receive the maximum credit, joint filers must have made less than $150,000. Head of households must have made less than $112,000 or $112,500. And single filers must have made less than $75,000. For amounts above the set limit, there is a 5% reduction in credit that scales to the amount of money above the limit. In order to be eligible, you must be a non-claim citizen of the U.S. And errors in calculations regarding the reduction of the credit will be treated as mathematical or clerical errors and be assessed according to Section 6213B1, which governs exceptions to restrictions on assessments. And in the case of joint returns, the credit will be sent in two payments of half the amount to be credited. Now, people who are eligible for the credit shall be treated as having made a payment against the tax imposed equal to the amount of their refund. This basically means that the government is treating the stimulus checks as if they are a refund on payments that have already been made. This also means that overpayments won't have to be paid back and that it has been verified and that, well, that fact has been verified by the IRS. Now, the refund has to be distributed as rapidly as possible and finished no later than December 31st, 2020. Authorization is made to distribute the funds digitally to bank accounts on file with the IRS, and there is also no interest allowed on overpayments. If a 2019 return hasn't been filed, a 2018 year return may be used. If a 2018 nor 2019 has been filed, then a person's Form SSA 1099, Social Security Benefit Statement, or Form RRB 1099, Social Security Equivalent Benefit Statement can be used. And the IRS actually set up a portal on their website that allowed people that didn't have Social Security benefits and hadn't filed taxes to input information into the website in order to give the information for their banking information and in order to verify some forms of claims. Now, within 15 days of getting a payment, notification will be made by mail letting you know what you got, why you got it, what's going on. Valid identifications need to be presented to the IRS for every eligible person, aka a Social Security number. Exceptions to the Social Security number requirement are adoptions, in which case the taxpayer identification number of the child applies. Now, members of the military only need one spouse to have a Social Security number in the case of a joint return, and missing valid ID numbers are treated as mathematical or clerical errors, and the Treasury or Secretary will create regulations and other guidance regarding the necessary things required to carry out the stimulus refund payments. Now, the clerical error piece is important because typically if you have done, it basically means, not even getting too deep into it, it basically means that they won't charge you interest and you won't be charged with fraud and you won't have all of these other things. When a clerical error happens, you simply get a statement saying that there's been a clerical error and it lets you know if there's anything else that needs to be done. All right, so it's a lot different from getting a statement saying, hey, man, you cheated us out of our money. We coming for you, bro. Hide your kids, hide your wife, and all that other stuff. Nah, that ain't what's going down. So the clerical error piece is nice. Now, payments to U.S. territories will follow the same guidelines as previously mentioned if they have a mirror tax code. If they don't, The Treasury Secretary will pay to each territory the amount estimated by the Secretary of Treasury as being enough. Territories that don't mirror the tax code must have in place a plan for distributing the funds. Now, credits aren't allowed against U.S. income taxes to people in territories to whom a credit is allowed against taxes imposed by the territory because of this package or who are eligible for a payment under this section. Puerto Rico and the Northern Mariana Islands are considered, along with other territories, as possessions in this law. And these payments are also not subject to reductions or offsets because of federal activity regarding federal fines and debts, meaning that just if you owe the federal government money, they won't take their money out of your refund. Again, this is treated as an overpayment. So they're acting in the mechanics of it. They're saying that you gave us too much money, so we're giving you your money back. So that's how, again, that's how this is working out. Now, there are appropriations to the Treasury, and all of these appropriations will remain available until September 30th, 2021. There are $78.65 million appropriated for salaries and expenses, $293.5 million appropriated to the IRS taxpayer services, $170 million is appropriated for operations support, and $37 million is appropriated for enforcement. And money can be moved between the accounts between all of the accounts mentioned above. Now, the Social Security Administration also has appropriation for $38 million for administrative expenses. And within 15 days of the law passing, the Secretary of the Treasury will submit a plan of action, a plan of expected usage funds, a usage of the funds. Get it together, bro. Get it together. Which should have, you know, that should have already happened. I couldn't find much about whether it had or not. And after 90 days, the Secretary of Treasury will submit a quarterly report to Congress that shows the actual expenditure of funds and the expected future expenditure of funds. Now, with regards to this section in particular, it's been helpful for people that have gotten their funds, but it's been frustrating for a lot of people as well. Not only did we have funds getting sent to the wrong place, not only did we have people not getting enough funds, but we also had people that had their banks take the funds because of some fees that they were due that were owed to the bank, overdraft collections and various other things. Now, there's nothing in this law that says that the banks can't do that. So, you know, there's nothing in the law saying that it's illegal for them to do that. Now, if you did not get enough money, and this isn't in the law, this is a part of one of the guidances issued by the IRS and the Treasury Department. If you did not get enough money, the money that you are owed will be paid to you when you file your 2020 taxes at the start of next year. And if you got too much money, then congratulations. Now, if you got paid money that literally wasn't owed to you, like you got twice the amount of money you were supposed to get or, you know, anything like that, personally, I would hold that money. I wouldn't spend that money because they might come asking for that money. But if you got a little bit extra or something like that, you know, it looks like stuff like that is going to slide. But again, if you didn't get enough, the IRS, when you file your 2020 taxes next year, they are supposed to add on the rest of the money that you were supposed to get for the refund onto your taxes next year, either as a credit if you owe or as an additional refund if you get money back. So, yeah, this was good. Do I think it was enough? Not really. You know, $1,200 for single people, $2,400 for married people. Married people with kids, $500 for each additional kid. It helps. It definitely helps. And my spouse works in healthcare, so, you know, she's still going to work. But I know a lot of other people who both parents have been furloughed, have had their hours cut, have been laid off or anything like that. And in those situations, this is just, it's not enough right now for them. And I don't know that, I mean, it is on the government to take care of that, especially considering the way this thing has been handled, as poorly as it's been handled. But there's also some corporate social responsibility in play there as well. And obviously, you can't legislate that sort of thing. You can only make it more appealing and accommodating for businesses to step up and do that. But I do think that for this to be significant, like significant, it needs to be a regular thing until people are allowed to get back to work. But then you are faced with the other challenge of how do you pay for it? How do you fund the entire economy, especially in a moment where people aren't allowed to move and the economy isn't allowed to maneuver the way it typically is? And it's a real tough situation. I'm not even knocking the government or anybody else. It's a hard spot to be in. Now, on that note, that brings to mind another thing that, you know, I noticed with this thing was that in order for you to get the joint coverage, the $2,400, both parties have to have a social security number. And what about the people that are married to people that don't have a social security number? What about the people that are married to legal immigrants, to people that are here on visas and things like that, when I say legal immigrants, or to people who have some other form of valid United States number, but that isn't a social security number, because the law was very specific about a social security number being needed. So, and the only exception to that was military members that are married to people that don't have social security numbers. So that is a concern, and we haven't seen a lot about that yet. Well, I haven't, although I'm sure that point has been mentioned and that it is affecting people, but it's not something that I've seen a lot of so far. But it is something that, reading through this thing, it just popped in my mind when I read the part that said, you know, both parties needed a social security number. Well, there are a lot of people that are in the U.S. legally that don't have a social security number for whatever reason. And those people are going to be left out. And then the question becomes, not only are they left out, but now is the entire family disqualified from a refund? And so that puts a real strain on the talking points about I'm cool with legal immigration and all these other things. When you put that in there, there are also a lot of people that pay taxes that don't have a social security number and that don't have all of these other things that are necessary, and they are going to get left out as well. And we got to remember, like, the immigrant population in America is huge. You know, it's not a small population whatsoever. The population of people in America that don't have a social security number is significant. And to disbar them and all of their families simply because they don't have a social security number, even if they're here legally, there's got to be a better way to administrate that. And that looks like another shot at immigration, another shot at the Hispanic and Latino community, another shot at brown and black communities all over the world when it comes to being in America. And that is something that definitely is a huge hit on this thing when I look at it and I see how it's going. But it's one of those things where, you know, people really, you really have to pay attention to what's happening, how the law is written, not just, you know, what the politicians are saying, because they're only going to sell you on the high parts. And even though I still feel like the refund was a good idea, there are a lot of problems I have with the way it's being executed and the way the policy was worded. But this was, it was helpful. It was definitely something that was needed. And the fact that it came out early was just in time. I would have liked to see more responsibility with the mistakes that were made and with the mistakes that are still being made, because high levels of the Treasury Department are still saying everything is perfect and they're denying claims that people didn't get their money, didn't get the right amount. I'll be clear. We didn't get the right amount in this house. You know, think there are definitely issues going on here, but on the whole, I think that it's been very beneficial. Now, the next section covers rules for the use of retirement funds, and it starts by exempting eligible use funds from the 10% tax on early withdrawal codified in Section 72T of the IRS Code of 1986. Coronavirus-related distributions for a taxable year cannot exceed $100,000, and these amounts can be paid back if the person wants to, as long as it's done within 3 years of the date that the money was received, and can be done in any number of payments that the person wishes. Now, coronavirus-related contributions is described as any distribution from an eligible retirement plan between January 1st, 2020, including January 1st, and December 31st, 2020, not including December 31st. It must also be distributed to an individual that has been diagnosed with COVID, who has a spouse or a dependent diagnosed with COVID, or who has experienced financial consequences as a result of being quarantined, furloughed, fired, or had their work hours reduced because of COVID, to include having to work less because of a lack of childcare or other reasons. And this is in addition to what we talked about in previous shows with the unemployment benefits, the filling in of the, you know, the lost hours. They can get some benefits if you've had your hours cut back, and various other benefits that are out there for people that have had their ability to make money or their income disturbed by COVID. So they also now have the ability to draw from their retirement plans at a tax break. Now, the retirement plan administrators may rely on certifications from employees for a distribution of their retirement plans under corona-related causation. And eligible retirement plans are defined by Section 402C8B, and they are a qualified trust that is exempted from taxes under Section 501A. An annuity plan, an eligible deferred compensation plan, and an annuity contract. Now, these distributions are exempted from rules regarding rollover distributions, meaning you don't have to pay taxes on them if you pull them out making transfer fees, and retirement distributions required to be included in gross income for the taxable year will be included ratably over the three-year tax period, beginning with the first taxable year unless waived by the taxpayer, and that's basically another form of a tax break. Now, loans taken from employer plans to qualified individuals made during the 180-day period beginning on the date this law was passed, so that 180-day period has started and it ends September 23rd, 2020, are eligible for an increase in acceptable distribution from $50,000 to $100,000, and can have payments delayed paying back the loan for a year. And if any repayment occurs during 2020 and after the passage of the law, interest will also be halted during the first year delay. Now, getting the loan requires corona effects that are the same as the retirement distribution eligibility requirements. So there is that. But this is another one of those things where it offers people another opportunity to gain tax breaks and take care of themselves without, you know, disrupting themselves too much in the long term, dealing with the disruptions the coronavirus has had with everybody's life. So Section 2203 offers a temporary waiver of the required minimal distribution rules for certain retirement plans and accounts for 2020. Specifically, it waives the minimum required distribution of retirement plans for 2020. And what that is it's for people that have reached retirement age, I think it's 72 and older, or 71 and a half if you've retired before January 2020, and it's 70 and older if you retired after January 1st, 2020. But anyways, once you retire, you have a required certain amount that you are required to pull from your retirement plan every year. And this basically waives that. And Section 2204 offers a tax deduction for charitable contributions made in 2020 for up to $300 for taxpayers who do not itemize their tax deductions. And this is significant as well, because typically, in order to get credit for charitable donations, you have to itemize. And itemization for a lot of people is a headache. It looks complicated. It's kind of intimidating, and people just don't want to do it. So because of that, people just don't do it. And a lot of times they miss the breaks, and there's a whole thing going on there with tax deductions and itemization that could be a show in and of itself as well. But anyways, nowadays, you don't have, or for this year, you don't have to itemize in order to claim up to $300 for charitable contributions, which is another tax break, essentially. And Section 2205 modifies the limitations on charitable contributions during 2020. And by modify, I mean it effectively removes them. For qualified contributions, which are listed as charitable contributions paid in cash during the calendar year of 2020 to an organization listed in Title 26, Subtitle A, Chapter 1, Subchapter B, Part 6, Section 170, Part B, Subpart 1, Section G.2. Did you get all that? I didn't either. Anyways, basically, it's any government recognized nonprofit. And are any organization that's performing a government recognized service. So if you could claim somebody as a charitable organization before, you can do it here as well. Now, there are some exceptions, which is that it doesn't apply to future benefits of a personal nature or the establishment or maintenance of an existing donor advised fund, and food contributions limitations have also been lifted by 10%. Now, this is beneficial to nonprofits because nonprofits have been kind of saying for a while there needs to be an easier way to claim charitable contributions during tax time so that more people can be inspired to claim those tax breaks and give more money. The problem here is that it comes during a year where the American economy has effectively stalled. So I don't know if it's going to do a whole lot of good this year, and it's only in effect for this year. So it's in my opinion, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, here, nonprofits, feel good about your life, but we ain't really doing anything for you now. That's when it comes to nonprofits that rely on small donations from a bunch of different people. Now, when it comes to nonprofits that rely on contributions from corporations, they don't have those issues. Corporations basically are getting a huge tax break here. If my understanding of what I read was correct, they are getting a monumental tax break here because before there was a limit on charitable contributions. Now, true. You could roll over anything that was over the amount that a nonprofit or anything that was over the amount that a person or an organization or a corporation could give charitably and claim was eligible to be rolled over for the next 5 years. So there was a limitation, but there was kind of a way around it. But that limitation still meant that any donations given above a certain amount for many organizations was not really worth giving. And that might be why we saw, or that might be a part of the reason as to why we see multi-billion dollar corporations and hundreds of millions of dollars, $100 million corporations that only give out $5,000 and $10,000 checks to corporations instead of giving out, you know, $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 or $1 million. Donations to charitable organizations, something that would really get a charitable organization into another plane of existence. We rarely see that. And I do believe, this is me speaking personally, I do believe that that's because they won't get full tax credit for it. It's not a full write-off for them. They can carry it over for the next years, but they won't get it. But in this case, contributions that they make in 2020, full write-off. Huge tax break for corporations. And I don't think it's really going to be all that helpful for a bunch of most of the nonprofits. But let me say it this way. I think that the way that this thing is going to assist people or to assist the different sectors that are involved is heavily lopsided towards corporations and wealthy individuals. I think that the ability that they're going to have to write off those taxes and claim that tax credit is going to outstrip any benefits that the nonprofit sector might get from any sort of increased funding. And that's just what it is. That's just how I feel about it. Now, Section 2206 basically allows an exclusion from employee income for income tax purposes of employer payments to students' loans made before January 1st, 2021. And that's another benefit for the corporations and for people that hire people and that employ people. So that's this round. It's basically all around, all about the money that people are going to get, more talking about the sorts of benefits that businesses are going to get a little bit in the charitable organizations. Overall, I think this was decent for the consumers. I think it was huge for corporations. I think they're going to get the most out of it, but it is what it is. We'll see how it works out because this is already in play. Next week, we're going to talk about the final section of Title II, Title II. It's going to be Subtitle TC, Business Provisions, and that'll be the next show on...
Lessons from the screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trust me, tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
I want to thank you guys once again for listening to Lessons from the Screen. I want to ask you guys to go to, if you have an Android device, go to the Google Play Store, type in Freedom Train Radio. You'll see the logo of the train. Download the app, get the app. It'll keep you up to date on all of the shows and everything else that's going on here at the Freedom Train Network. Also, head on over to www.freedomtrainradio.com and check out all the shows. Leave comments, leave reviews. If you want to reach us or say anything to us, that's the best way to do it. Because if you just reach out through your social media, your a podcast listening app or YouTube or whatever, we don't check all of those things, but we do check the website. So go there. Also, I just want to thank you guys once again for tuning in, and see you next week. Let me know what you think about the show you just listened to. Let me know if you agree, disagree, you felt like I missed something, whatever it is, just holla at your boy, and I will see you next week or whenever the next show comes out. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show again, hit us up on the Freedom Train Radio website and let us know that you're interested in sponsoring a particular show or the entire network.